have to be different. Then the Word of Knowing Authority helps us do that. And we looked at the survey results, talked about that in that box on page 22. That was taken, I don't know how many years ago that survey was done, but it was some relevant information that we need to be conscious of and be able to recognize the importance of it. Let me give this illustration at the last of class on Sunday, as you remember, the importance or the need for authority, and just a simple illustration of determining the length of a line, which really in the grand scheme of things is vastly immaterial. But we illustrated it from two very practical perspectives. What a father might guess, and his son would not stake his salvation on it. And what a preacher might guess, and what another person would not stake his salvation on that. And yet we see that happen, don't we? All in the quote-unquote religious world. And as I remembered, Brother Crafts and I got together. And I told you I'd forget, didn't I? I brought up Brother Woods. You remember that on Sunday? How the liberally minded brethren eventually became very tired of Brother Woods, and they had no use for him because he, at one moment in time, tried to rein back in his liberal brethren, and they weren't going to have that. He got too conservative. And that illustration, along with the one that went with this, about what preachers might say, Jimmy had a quote he was going to share with us. So, Jimmy, share that speak right up. Yes, you may. That way it'll get recorded. I'll just stand here beside him.
Yeah, you mentioned Brother Wood. I guess it was in 1966, at the end of the service where I was attending, there was a letter read, which, you know, when you translate it into plain old Athens English, it said, "We're going to start giving $10 a month out of the church treasury to Child Haven Offerings Home. If you don't agree with that philosophy, we would invite you to leave and not cause trouble." Of course, that night I was at Eastside, and I've been here ever since, along with Christine Sywell and one or two other people. But as I went back and talked to one of the elders a couple of days after that, this is what he said. "Brother Guyan Wood is one of our big preachers, and he said this is the way we ought to do it, and he must be right." My comment was, and I didn't mean it in a smart way, I said, "I don't know what you describe as big. I don't know how tall the man is. I don't know how much he weighs. But he's wrong. And the reason I know he's wrong, because the Bible doesn't teach that." And I had the good fortune, along with Shirley and Jeanette Holt and one or two more, to spend much of our junior year in Bible with Brother Irvin Lee talking about the institutional problem. So when the problem arose, I didn't have to make a decision. I already had my mind made up as to what I would do. And we just did that. Brother Lee had just lost his job at Grant Street in the spring of that year because of his stand against the institutional issue. As a 16-year-old, let me tell you, that made an impression on me. A man who would give up a job where he had support in his family because of what he believed, that made me listen.
Okay, thank you, Jimmy. I thought that was a good illustration. It combined two different things we were talking about to get us to see just how important. Not that we need to go back and just rethink and even try to relive the past. We're not interested in doing that. We want to understand it. And most of us in this room tonight, well, I don't know if I can say most, maybe half of us in this room tonight, we're not even around when those battles were fought. But that still doesn't mean we don't need to know what happened and understand what happened so that we don't repeat those same mistakes. So I thought that was a very good illustration to share, and I appreciate it. Appreciate that, Jimmy. Okay, so we talked about the necessity of appealing to a standard. If we truly have to know the length of this little line, we're going to have to get the standard out. If we're going to truly have to know the pattern as it relates to the work of the church, the identity of the church, the plan of salvation, you just go on down the line. It doesn't make any difference what the issue is. What's the only right way to go about that? We're going to have to get the standard out and see what the standard says. And whatever it says. What if the standard doesn't match what we've always thought? Now, one option would be to just change standards, right? We could do that. And a lot of folks do that. But that's not the honest way. What's the only honorable and honest thing to do? We're going to have to change. If we don't match the standard, we're going to have to change. So that we can be right with God. Okay. Now, I want to look at some of these comments on page 23. And this is one of the things I remember when I spoke with the elders about all this material, that they wanted us to do these studies for two quarters in Bible basics. We talked somewhat about authority. That was one of the things that we did discuss. And one of the elders said, before we get too much involved in a lot of the specific language of Bible authority and, you know, establishing authority and generic versus specific authority, which are going to cover all that, one of the elders did say, I think it'd be good if you did spend some time just in a general way, talk about the need for authority, and not just biblical authority, but any authority. Because aren't there other examples of authority besides biblical authority in our world? Sure there is. And we all recognize that. So I just listed here on page 23 those first four bullet points. And I just want you, for the sake of argument, just let your mind go free for just a moment and try to imagine a world without authority, any kind of authority. And look what would result if we lived in such a state, if we could call it that. It'd be a total chaos on lots of fronts. Here's just four quick examples. Society depends, we don't live like it most of the time, but really we do. We depend on the authority of law enforcement. I mean, we do. The ones who wouldn't like that would be the criminals. They'd love for that to go away. But basically, the authority of law enforcement. Commerce has a sense of authority. And listed here, for example, of the authority of standards, weights, and measures, even since the days of the Bible. For example, in Deuteronomy 25, 13 to 16, remember what the law said? You shall not have differing weights. God said, to me, that is what? That is an abomination. So he said, you're not supposed to do that. See, hey, there's a standard right there. A pound is a pound. A shekel is a shekel. Across the board. It's always the same. Communication would grind to a halt without the authority of language and the meaning of words. Words have meaning. Words mean something. And even I think the youngest of us in here tonight could reflect not too far back. What did an American president do when he got caught? Remember what he did? He shall go nameless, but I think we know who I'm talking about. He wanted, under grand jury testimony, he wanted to debate ad nauseum the meaning of a two-letter word. The word is. Do you recall that? Now that's pitiful. See, he's trying to change the definition of a simple word to hide his illicit and his sinful behavior. But words mean something. And if we didn't have the authority of just good old plain American English, then look what in a mess we'd be in. See, there's authority there. Absolutely, there's authority there. And everyday interaction among humans would cease without the authority of keeping time. How much of our life do we measure in time? Don't we measure quite a bit of it? You measure your time on your job, or you measure your work at your secular occupation in terms of time. We even measure our assemblies in time. Preacher preaches too long. See, that's an element of time right there. I have a picture that I want to show you. Now, this is over my head, but I think the illustration is good. Some of you engineers here would get this a lot better than I will. This is a picture of the cesium fountain atomic clock at the National Bureau of Standards in Boulder, Colorado. And that's a clock, if you can imagine. This great big hunk of metal there. And on their website, they list it as the primary time and frequency standard for the United States. How long is a second? Now, do we depend on the length of a second? Well, we do. Because seconds become minutes, and minutes become hours, and hours become days, and on down the line that way. Now, this gets really technical. 1 second, according to this clock, is 9 billion, and you see the number there, oscillations or cycles of the cesium atom. That's what this thing determines. Can you imagine that? Now, that gets pretty technical. But that's what determines, in our country, what a second is. I'll tell you what, that is the authoritative standard for keeping time. Now, I've never seen that piece of machinery. Maybe one of you all have, but I never have. But do we depend on that? We depend on that. We do. So, even without talking about the Bible, and of course that's what we're interested in this class, but I just wanted to take a step out of that just for the moment and just think on a general basis, just a broad scale. Look how much our world would just absolutely disintegrate and fall apart. It would. Without any basis of authority in any realm whatsoever. We've got to have authority. What makes the home today in our country in the sad shape that it's in? That's right. Parents are not doing their God-given job in rearing their children. Homes are in a mess. What makes so many local churches of the Lord? And let's not talk about the man-made denominational churches. Let's just confine our discussion at this moment to the churches that wear the Lord's name. Why are so many local churches of Christ in the bad shape they're in? Why is that? They're not adhering to the standard. That's why. See? So this idea is far, far reaching. And so it's incumbent upon us to properly understand what we're talking about when we say, you know, we can quote these old trite sayings. We speak where the Bible speaks, and we're silent where the Bible is silent. We want to do Bible things in Bible ways. And those sayings came out of a very tumultuous time, and they have meaning. But they're not just sayings. There's something behind it that we need to really understand. And that's why we're going through these exercises, so that we can properly understand the need for authority, especially biblical authority. So what we're talking about is this idea of a sense of order. Now, maybe, and I'm just proposing this, I'm not going to make this a contest, but biblically, quite likely, the most chaotic time in the Bible would have been the days of the judges. Because Judges 17 and verse 6, you turn your Bibles there, you read that statement, maybe you even already know what it says, you can quote it. But in Judges 17, 6, well, just the period of the judges, just looking at the Bible as a linear picture, just a timeline. Is that one of Israel's brighter moments? Hardly. Not very good. But there's a statement in that verse that I think speaks rather loudly. Somebody have that. Who has Judges 7? Brent, you have that? Judges 17, verse 6. Now, there you go. No king in Israel. Now, of course, we know the judges led to the United Kingdom. Now, having a king on the throne wasn't God's idea. That was the people's idea, but God still granted them the king. They had a king already. God was their king. But the verse says there was no king in Israel. There was no looked-at authority. They couldn't see their king. They wanted somebody on the throne that they could look at. So God granted that wish. But the text says that you just did whatever you wanted to. What time does that sound like? today. Sounds like today, don't it? Everybody does what they want to. No standard. See, no law, no rule of authority. And I've got 1 Kings 2, verses 3 and 4 cited. Why don't you turn to that passage real quick also, just as a passage of comparison. This is David's charge to Solomon. David is not long for the world. He's soon going to die, and he's giving some final words to his son. And the reason I want to look at this passage real quickly is just simply to contrast it with what the passage in the record of the Judges says versus what this passage says. Albert, read 1 Kings 2, 4, verses 3 and 4. What appeal is David making? Where is he appealing? To the law, isn't he? He's appealing to the law. Now, Solomon, if you really want to make this a good kingdom and do the best you can do, he's saying, you look to the law. See, that's the standard. There's the standard right there. That's what God has said on there. And that's our idea. So I want to contrast the prevailing thought during the days of the judges versus how David charged his son Solomon on the eve of his reign. If you really want to prosper, if you really want to do well, you look to the law that God has given. Okay. Maybe in our day, religious anarchy, we can see it. I'm not trying to paint this picture of just a bunch of running around out here and you know, wild living. And, well, I guess that's true. That is our culture. But I think there is some sense of order. But we're coming at this from the mindset of people appealing to other standards for their religion other than the Bible. And that's the anarchy I'm trying to describe, not a free-for-all. Religious anarchy can be equally confusing to anyone who's searching for truth. And we've made this comment before. Perhaps you have a neighbor or a friend or a family member. It's getting to be more difficult to find those kinds of people anymore, but I believe they're out there. Like in the book of Acts, chapter 18, when Paul was told by the Lord, "Now, Paul, you don't be afraid." He said, "I've got many people in this city." Those people weren't yet converted, but yet God said, "I've got them out there. Now you've got to go find them." So we can find them. They're out there. So serious searchers for truth, they can be found. But if they don't have an idea of what the Bible teaches, what kind of shape are they in? Are they at a huge disadvantage with what's out here on the religious landscape in America? They're going to be told this and this and this and this and this, and they don't have a firm basis like you and I may in terms of understanding the Bible message with which to compare these things. They just don't know a lot of things. So what are they supposed to do? Are they not somewhat handicapped? I think they are. They're going to have a hard time. And so this gets back to one of the earlier points that I made, is that if we really understand this, then when we come in contact with them, see, what can we do? What service can we render? Well, we can teach them. We can help them see these important points, that they can understand what is to be and what is not to be. Parents can better teach their children. Grandparents better teach their grandchildren these issues, these important things that are absolutely critical. So, all religious options are presented in our culture. They're all equally viable. They're all acceptable. In fact, in our culture, religious diversity is not just tolerated. It's demanded, isn't it? It is. Let's not set up a church or a state-run church. Well, I'm not for that either. But I am for the church that the Lord talked about in His Word. That's the one that we need to be for. So this notion of anarchy that results because of people trying to live and practice and teach their own thing, we've looked at this passage before in the previous lesson. John 17, the Lord's Prayer. Again, what did He pray for? He prayed for unity. That all believers who would hear the message through His disciples, He said, "I do not pray for these alone, these 12, but all who would believe in Me through their message." Why? That they all may be one. So what we see out here is, again, hardly anything remotely like what the Lord prayed for. It's just not there. And I think the main culprit, the main problem is a lack of understanding on some of these very, very core biblical issues. And so we need to further ground ourselves in these things. That passage there in John 17, this is the last statement there in the third full paragraph on page 23. It goes back to our studies on pages 8 through 11 of this material when we talked about unity and all those other churches we quickly went through. Okay. Anybody have a comment or a question to add to our discussion? Speak right up if you do. When we're talking about authority, of course, we've been talking mostly about collective authority, but it's also as important, is it not, maybe even more so, that we talk about individual authority. Our church is accountable to the Lord. Well, of course they are. Yeah. In fact, the language that is so full of imagery from the book of Revelation to John, what is it that each church has? It has a candlestick. But what can happen if a church does not do what her Lord wants her to do, based on some of the talk from that book? He can take that candlestick away, can't he? He can remove that candlestick. So that's on a collective level. That's on a broad scale. But what about individualism? That's right. And we're going to make that point. In fact, that point is made, Beerford, you're right. Even though the church may accept, as Jimmy just reminded us, of what one church decided to do, he mentioned some individual saints who said, we just cannot go along with that. And many of us, if we went around and let tonight everybody tell their story, if we were interested in doing that, we could probably hear other incidents or other episodes in history where some had to leave a church for one reason or another because of the route that a certain church was going to take in a certain matter. And see, that's individualism. That's what we're talking about. Everybody's individually accountable. Remember the parable in Matthew 25 of the servants who were given three different talents, or three different kinds of talents, five and two and one? They were dispensed. It seems to be they were dispensed in mass. But when each one had to give an account, did they come before the king as a group or individually? Individually. That's right. Verse 21 talks about the five-talent man, and he was praised. And verse 23 talks about the two-talent man, and he was praised. See, there's individual accountability. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10, for we shall all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. And we'll all give account for the deeds done in the body, whether they be good or whether they be evil or bad. So we all have to bear that. Now, what if everyone else is doing wrong? And it'd be easy to go along with them, wouldn't it? But what does the Bible portray? How about Genesis 6 and verse 8? Speaks of what well-known character? Noah. The verses preceding verse 8, what kind of description did we have of the people of the earth then? Well, it wasn't good, was it? It was pretty bad. In fact, as that passage talks about, not only were their deeds bad, but it gave emphasis to what else? Their thoughts were only evil continually. And the Bible says that this grieved the Lord. He was even sorry that he even made man. So he determined, I'm just going to have to wipe this out and start over. But I want you to see the one phrase. Verse 8 begins with the word but. Contrast. Here's all these other things, but what? But Noah found grace. See, everybody else is going down the broad way. But Noah, he didn't have to follow, and he didn't follow. Revelation 3 and verse 4, in one of the letters, given to, let's turn to read that right quick. I was going to, on my memory, try to remember which church is being addressed, and I was going to get it wrong. I don't want to do that. Revelation 3, the church at Sardis. Look at the contrast. Did most of the church at Sardis go astray based on verse 4? Looks like it. But what was the commendation? There's a few in Sardis who had not done what? Who had not soiled or defiled their garments. Most had. That's the implication. Most had. But a few had not. A few were standing and saying, no, we're not going to do that. And the Lord took notice of that. Okay, so we're just simply saying, yes, we're going to talk about some things on a collective issue, or on a collective level. But let's not also lose sight of the fact that we're also equally accountable on an individual level. And though it's quite obvious, well, sometimes you've got to state the obvious. We won't be judged on the basis of husband and wife. We'll be judged individually, all of us will, whether or not we've adhered to the standard. Yes, sir.
Go back up there where society depends on authority.
Yes.
If we get caught speeding, which they probably don't know it, but we didn't see it.
That's true.
But our name being the paper, we break the law, man's law.
Yes.
We may be punished and we don't know it.
Well, that's true. That's true. That's right. So there are consequences to behavior, whether it's civil behavior, whether it's moral behavior, religious behavior. We looked at Hebrews 2 not too long ago, that if God was, or if the word spoken through angels proved steadfast, and every transgression received a just recompense or reward, the writer says, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? And the answer is, of course, we won't. So that's a good... A good comment to make, buddy. Okay, before we look at some of these discussion questions, does anybody have a comment they'd like to make or a question you want to ask? Yes, Greg.
Back to the point of hay.
Right. That's right. That's very, very true. I once heard a preacher making a sermonist illustration. Here you are, and you're in the river. And you're floating down the river this way, and you know that there's a waterfall out there eventually that you're a little bit concerned about. But right now you think you're okay because you're behind this stick. That's your point of reference. Well, what's wrong with that, obviously? The stick's moving too. The stick's not still. I mean, but you know, it's down there. Yeah, but I'm still behind that stick. Well, that doesn't make me feel any better. I mean, I'm still headed for the same doom, whether I'm ahead of the stick or behind the stick. See, our point of reference is correct. We're not saying, well, I'm not as bad as they are. Well, so what? So what? Are you doing what the Lord wants you to? That's the thing we're after. Yes, Albert. Yes, right. They're not the standard either. That's exactly right. So we're trying our best to properly understand what the standard is on these issues. We can't in this one class discuss all the issues that are out there to be discussed and studied. We don't have time for all that. But we can discuss a formula or a regimen where that can be then applied to any given issue. And it will guarantee success as long as we stick to that formula. Okay. Well, let's look at Matthew chapter 21. This is a passage that we had referenced a little bit earlier, and we want to go back to it just real briefly. I ask you to think about a question that I find extremely relevant, that really is a fair question. All right? Now, where are we in the Lord's life on earth, this event? Anybody know where we are historically? Yes, sir. In fact, it's last week. This is on Monday. What the world has called Palm Sunday, the Bible doesn't call it that, but that's what we've come to call that, where he entered into Jerusalem with the palm branches on the colt of the donkey. That was Sunday. The next day was Monday, and Jesus cleansed the temple a second time. And he'd done it before, as you remember. And the book of John records that, but Matthew records this one This is the second time it happened. And so Jesus has spent now the last 3 years, okay, combating these Jews. They were well acquainted with each other. And Jesus comes in and he sees them exchanging, buying and selling merchandise, making a Walmart out of the temple, so to speak. And so he makes a cord of a whip out of cords, and he drives out the money changers. And so he gets asked a question. What'd they ask Jesus? Who do you think you are? Was really what? Who are you? And who do you think you are doing this? By what authority do you do these things? That is, cleansing the temple. And the follow-up question was what? And who gave you that authority? Now, you just can't come waltzing in here doing this. All right. So that was the question. All right. Now, just on the surface, and we'll answer this just in a moment. Do you get any idea from this text at what Jesus thought about that question? Just on the surface. Was it a fair question? It's a fair question. Because he offered to answer it, didn't he? He did. Now, he didn't say, now you can't ask me that because I'm the Son of God. He didn't say that. Okay? He offered to answer. It's a fair question. But Jesus knew their heart, and we'll get to that just in a moment. And that's how it plays out. Okay? So we're talking about this idea of the events that surrounded the second temple cleansing. Now the Jews asked Jesus that question, by what authority do you do these things and who gave you this authority? And Jesus' reply is the relevant question that we want to consider. Verse 25. That's what we're talking about here. And he says in verse 24, to their question, well, I'll ask you a question. Okay? And if you'll answer mine, then I'll answer yours. That's fair. Baptism of John. Whence came it? The old King James says. Where'd it come from? From heaven or from men? Okay? Now, that's the question. Now, what I'm asking you to talk about and to answer here, why is that such an apropos or a relevant question that Jesus asked? Why is that such? Jesus always ever so masterful in dealing with these situations. Why was that the perfect thing to say to these men? He knew they couldn't answer it? Okay, because of who they were. But now, the way he phrased this question, what does it address, Trevor? That's true. And the Bible gives us the privilege of seeing them reason among themselves. Okay, and it tells us that. But the question centers on two points of reference, doesn't it? What are they? That's right. That's it. Is it of divine design or divine origin, or is it of human origin? Now, other than those two choices, can you think of a third one? With respect to a religious practice. I can't think of one either. Bobby, I'm with you on that. I can't think of one either. It's either of human design, human origin, or it's of divine design and divine origin. And so Jesus says, now look, let's just get right down to brass tacks. Okay, let's talk about it. I'll answer your question if you answer this one first. What about this baptism of John? Do you agree that it came from heaven or did it come from men? Now, as the text points out, what were they not willing to do and for what reason? Or reasons, I should say. Well, what was their quandary? Why was that? That's right. What do they sound like in that deliberation? Politicians. Well, we're in a box here. I mean, if I say this, we alienate this group. But if we say this, and we alienate that group. And so they took the political way out. What did they say, Charles? We just can't say. Well, the answer is we won't say. Not that they couldn't. They said we won't say it. And so in response, what did the Lord say? then I'm not going to answer your question. Right? If you won't answer mine, then I'm not going to answer yours. But what I want to focus on, not so much the interaction between the two of them, I want to focus on the beauty, okay, the penetrating beauty of the Lord's question. He cut right to the core issue. Is this thing that's being discovered, or this thing that's being considered, is it of heaven, divine origin, or is it of human origin? Okay? Now, can we take this same question and make use of it today? Absolutely. What if someone, and we have, let's see, we got one, two, three. We got three elders in here. Someone comes to elders and say, you know, I want to propose something. Okay? I think we ought to do this thing. It'd be a great work for the church. I'm not telling you guys how to do your business. But what's his principle? What should be one of the first thoughts in your mind? Well, did the Lord say we could do that? Is this of a divine design? Or is it of a human origin? See, that's the first question. What if the Lord didn't say we could do it? Or didn't authorize us to do it? Doesn't it stop right there? That's where the discussion ends. Well, but look at all the good that we can do. That's not the point. See, we're already dead in the water. Right? It ends right there because the Lord did not authorize us doing that. That's the issue of authority right there. That's why this question is so germane to any religious discussion. I don't care what the issue is, whether it's institutionalism, whether it's marriage, divorce, and remarriage, whether it's the work of the church, whether it's whatever it is. This question applies, I'm saying, to any given situation and the principles that are behind it. Is it of heaven or is it of men? What if it's of heaven? Well, then we can do it. Well, not that we can do it, we better be doing it. Because it's the Lord's idea. And that's what He wants us to do. All right? So, this is precisely the question that we need to be asking of any religious practice that is going on today. The Jews failed to answer in the last part of verse 25, I think needs to be discussed also. They showed some understanding, and this is question two, in the same episode, how did the Jews show they also recognized authority in religion? Last part of verse 25. They reasoned, if Jesus says it's of heaven, what did they recognize and accept? That's right. Because He's going to tell us, then why didn't you accept it? Why didn't you do it? They understood that. Now, they didn't agree with it because they didn't do it, but they at least understood it. So even they had a level of understanding of the necessity, okay, and the importance of biblical authority. And they knew Jesus would question them on that and their failure to receive it if they had, in fact, admitted to it being from God. Again, I say, their question of Jesus was fair. It was legitimate because He even offered to answer it. Jesus does not rebuke the question. What does He rebuke? Their hypocrisy. That's what's being rebuked here. Again, He didn't say, that question is not germane. No, it was a fair question. But because they're going to play politics with this situation, that's what was rebuked. All right. Okay, we got about a half a minute left. That's a good place to stop. Anybody have any closing comments or questions? Okay, we're trying our best to dig right down to the middle of this and see it for what it is and make proper application of it. Okay, we'll pick up here then, the Lord willing, on Sunday morning with question 3 on page 24.